It was early the next morning when the well-armed warders came for Preacher and his companions. As condemned men, they were kept separate from all other participants. They had only reached the far end of the tunnel when the condemned missionaries got rousted out of their holding pen and directed into the tunnel. With a beating that none of the missionaries would soon forget, the small resistance was quickly thwarted. So much for the big escape.
Well, at least some of them Bible thumpers have got some sand. Maybe we can make use of that when we get there.
Likely they got what little spunk they had whooped out of them.
With or without them, we're going over those walls and out of this place. They come back from practicing that thing you're supposed to do before the lions, I intend to talk to a few of them.
Preacher had his opportunity shortly before the noon hour. The captives were driven back inside the lower levels of the arena and given a chance to slake their thirst. All of the regular gladiators had been released from their cells to be equipped for the practice fights. Preacher had been decked out in the flanged peaked helmet, net, and trident of a Riata Rias. For a while, he strutted around the common room in imitation of the professionals until the wary guards grew lax. Then he sidled over to the bars of the cage that held the missionaries. Quickly, he outlined his intention to make an escape and reviewed the plans with several of the younger men.
The more of us that makes a try, the better chance we have of getting away.
Without another word, Preacher turned on one heel of his fighting sandals and walked away. From a short distance off, Sister Amelia Witherspoon looked after him with a longing that was not the least bit sexual. She had been wondering about the whereabouts of Deacon Abercrombie when he had begun to talk with the men. What he said made her completely forget the deacon. She hungered for a man of courage like this one, someone who would lead these timid souls to freedom. Sounded to her like this could be the one. 2 days went by swiftly. Preacher took Buck and Philadelphia aside for a final discussion on their plan to escape from the arena.
We can't know when or how we'll do this. I figure we hoss one another up the inner wall and make a run through the onlookers. They won't be armed, and most of them will plain panic when we swarm in among them with weapons dripping blood. That'll keep the guards away.
I think the best thing is to do it right off. Go after that brat kid of Marcus Quintus and use him as a shield.
No, guards will be watching right close at first when we're fresh and all. If we can string it out until them gospel spouters are brought in, we can probably get a half dozen or so to come along. We've all been in enough tussles to know when the best time is, so use your judgment and keep an eye on.
Porticullis raised enough to let out a party of clowns. Preacher watched them with divided attention. They did somersaults and cartwheels, ran into one another, took pratfalls, and rolled in the sand. One, with an animal bladder filled with water, pounded on his companions until the thin skin broke and soaked the victim. When the last buffoon scampered back inside the dark interior of the Colosseum, the attendants went out to smooth off the killing grounds. That accomplished, trainers came to line up the whole company of gladiators and condemned prisoners. The gate rumbled upward, and the lead fighters in the company of the dead stepped out onto the sand. Young Quentin Faustus Americus entered the Imperator's box. Dressed in snowy toga with a broad purple hem stripe, he wore a circlet of gilded laurel leaves with gold-strapped sandals. Followed by his body servant, Casca, he went directly to the center seat of the front row and raised his right arm. In his hand, he held an ivory staff with a gold eagle on the top. He turned from side to side as he had been instructed and waved to the cheering crowd. Faustus's eyes sparkled with pleasure, yet he nevertheless maintained his composure while he seated himself. He turned his gaze upon the small group of gladiators that stopped on the sand just below him. Casca popped a grape between the lips of Faustus. His father and mother joined him and took seats at either side. Bulbus came next, followed by a dozen patrician boys who had been invited by Faustus. When the box had filled, Faustus rose and elevated the wand.
The auguries are good! The gods are pleased! Let the games begin!
A dark, malevolent glow cast itself upon the young boy's face at the mention of the word death.
Friends, thank you for the spectacle you have prepared in honor of my birthday. I am sure that I will enjoy it. Now it is time to begin. Parade yourselves for my other friends to see. Then bring on the first pairs!
Creature stared at the huge crowd around him. Even given the weight of his current predicament, he couldn't help but be somewhat amazed. The gladiators turned smartly to make a circuit of the arena. Behind them came the accommodators to smooth the sand. Although the air was cool on this last day of September, Preacher had worked up a sweat from the closeness of the Colosseum and the heat of the sun by the time they returned to the cool interior of the underground cells. The signal for the commencement was given. Four professionals stepped out onto the sand. They faced off one-on-one, saluted one another, set to. Aricianus tested his skill against the gladiator dressed as a samnite. The long, curved blade in the Samnite's hand danced a white-blue arabesque in the air. The Trident man looped his net in a hypnotic pattern right before the eyes of the swordsman. He prodded with his three-tined spear. Preacher in Philadelphia stood close to the iron lattice of the porticullis and watched intently. Beyond the fighters, he saw Faustus lean forward rapidly, his mouth sagging open, pink tongue flicking in and out. The Samnite lunged with his sword. The Rishianus flicked out his net and snared his opponent's blade in right arm. The Trident darted towards his exposed bare belt. Dancing on tiptoe, the Samnite turned to his right, away from the spear and free of the knotted lines of the net. Lightning fast, the Rishiarius came after the retreating gladiator. The Samnite's sword slashed through the air and bit deeply into the wooden shaft of the spear.
God damn, gotta remember to keep from doing that.
What's that?
The fella almost got his spear chopped in half. Careless.
There's a lot to learn for this kind of fighting.
On the sand, the net flared outward and fluttered down over the head and shoulders of the Samnite. At once, the Rishiarius ran around his helpless opponent and secured him in the snare. Then, with a powerful yank, he jerked the swordsman off his feet. He pounced on the supine body and raised his trident for the final blow. He hesitated at that point and looked up at the box. Faustus, light dancing in his eyes, leaned forward and shot out his arm. At the last moment, his father reached over and touched him lightly on his bare knee. Disappointment painted the boy's face momentarily. Then he turned his thumb up. The scream came from the lips of a gladiator with a spike ball flail. He had taken his eyes off his opponent for one split second, and that was all it would take. With blur and speed, the gladiator with the gladius had made a diagonal slash from the incautious fighter's right nipple to his left hip. The wounded gladiator fell to his knees. He sucked air deeply and dropped the handle of his flail. He sat abruptly. His eyes grew wide, and he worked frantically to stuff his intestines back inside his body. Preacher looked over at the box along with the victorious gladiator, panting in his excitement. Faustus wore the mask of a child demon as he eagerly thrust out his arm and turned his extended thumb downward. The swordsman quickly stepped over and struck the head from the gladiator's shoulders. Shoulder to shoulder, the three surviving gladiators marched to salute the young boy in whose honor this display of gore was being held. Then they returned to the gate, which rose to admit them. Another fanfare brought out the clowns, only these were not the same frisky children who had performed first. They appeared to be dazed, uncertain of where they were or what their purpose might be. Handlers quickly goaded them into fighting one another. Some were armed with tubes of sewn skin filled with sand, others with air-filled bladders. Another group carried straw-stuffed objects that Preacher could only guess at being animal parts. He watched them with a growing frown as they began to flail away at their companions. Philadelphia approached Preacher and nodded toward the grotesque performers.
I hear around that those poor folk are captives who have been tormented into states of craziness. They're supposed to whoop it up out there for a while, then comes a really bad part.
What's that?
Wait, you'll see.
The sorrowful clowns had milked their antics for all the laughs they could generate. At a signal from the real master of the games, Bulbous, small gates opened around the arena. Out rushed huge, ferocious, starved, mastiff dogs. The dogs fell on the poor, demented clowns. Preacher made a face of disgust as he looked beyond the slaughter to the small boy in the marble box. Faustus squirmed in a frenzy of excitement. Made Preacher's stomach churn. He turned to three young missionaries who looked as though they were about to pass out.
I tell you, friend, if you don't decide to fight back, you'll get what them poor fellows out there get. It don't feel nice getting ripped apart. Believe me, I know it. I done got mauled by a cougar some years back. If I didn't have a big knife and a warhawk with me, he'd have been dining on my innards before noon.
If I have something to fight with, I'll fight. I have a wife and two children to protect.
The son of Deacon Abercrombie glared at the missionary.
Your children have the right to decide for themselves how to best serve God.
A child can't make decisions about property or his schooling or anything else, Brother Filbert. I say he can't properly decide to die for the greater glory of the Lord.
Careful, brother. You are close to blasphemy.
Damn your blasphemy. I'll fight. And you would too if you had any stones.
The warder soon came and gathered Preacher and his two companions. Three of the toughest professionals joined him a moment later.
You will fight in pairs. You condemned men. If you win this match, you will be paired with another gladiator until you are killed. So fight your best and give the people a good show.
When the last of the demented victims succumbed to the ravening jaws of the mastiffs, the accommodators cleared the arena. Hawkers moved through the aisle, selling wine, popcorn, slices of melon, and other fruit. Others cut shaven-thin slices off roasted joints of meat and built sandwiches. The spectators ate and drank and talked through their laughter as they recalled their favorite kill by the vicious dogs. It all made Preacher want to drive the three tines of his trident into their guts and twist it while they shrieked in agony. The six fighters stepped out onto the scene. They advanced in two ranks, Preacher, Philadelphia, and Buck behind the professionals. At the center, they halted and saluted the boy imperator. Faustus rose and addressed him.
You three who defied the authority of New Rome will die here today. And I will take great pleasure in watching your blood soak into the sand. So do not slack. Give us a good fight so we can thrill in your agony.
The boy pointed his ivory wand at Preacher.
Especially you, my magnificent specimen. I expect great things from you. Now, let the fighting begin!
All six fighters squared off. Preacher knew he had to make this quick. He began to circle his opponent, the net held loosely in his left hand. He feinted tentatively with the trident. Suddenly, the gladiator opposite him burst forth with a frenzy of furious blows. Swiftly, Preacher stopped giving ground and drove the trident forward. Blind and hot pain erupted in Vindex's thigh as Preacher's trident bit deep. Preacher drew the small dagger from his belt and knelt beside the fallen fighter.
I'll make this quick to spare your pain.
That's what I intended for you! No need for us to provide entertainment for that sick, twisted child.
Preacher looked up at the boy to see an expression of fury on the soft features.
You were too fast! It's not fair! Spare him!
Preacher replaced his dagger and offered a hand to Vindex to help him come upright. Vindex was a proud favorite.
You'll live to fight another day.
Vindex gave him a grim smile, face contorted with pain. He limped away, but only to be replaced by another gladiator. This one bore the spiked mace. He came after Preacher in a rush. Meanwhile, Philadelphia had been matched with a squat, brawny brute who took particular pleasure in maiming his opponents before finally finishing them off. Despite the lingering discomfort of his old wound, Philadelphia Braddock danced lightly away from the gladius that darted before his eyes. So quick, Philadelphia almost missed it. Asperus widened his eyes in anticipation of a slash that would sever the mountain man's left arm, leaving him without a shield. With a swift jerk, Philadelphia raised the round metal protector. Philadelphia swung his right leg forward and pivoted to smash his armored cestus into the point of the left shoulder of Asperus. He shifted his weight and kicked Asperus in the belly. Biting his lower lip, Philadelphia hauled back and rammed the spikes of his cestus into the side of Asperus's head. Behind him, the portcullis clanged again, and another contender entered the arena. Philadelphia turned to see it would be Aricharius.
More trouble.
Meanwhile, Buck Sears faced a gladiator done up as a Nubian warrior, complete with zebra-painted shield, towering headdress, and assegai spear. Braided elephant tail hair and feather anklets circled his legs above bare feet.
Now ain't you the silliest damn fool I've ever seen? Huh? I said you looked like a fool!
Buck lunged out of the way of the advance. He swung the flat of his blade and smashed it into the ribs of his opponent. The Nubian stumbled and lowered his shield. Buck thrusted with his sword and cut a line across the gladiator's forehead, right below the gaudy headdress. The Nubian had recovered himself, and he came at Buck, driven by fury. Buck's strength wavered momentarily, and the Nubian seized the advantage. Setting his feet, he slammed his own shield into Buck's face. Buck's knees buckled, and he dropped onto the left. He shook his head in an effort to clear it while he fended off the plunging assegai. With a desperate effort, he brought his gladius around and drove it through the fire-hardened zebra print shield. Tip sliced 3 inches into the sweaty flesh of the Nubian's chest. Buck pulled back and regained his feet. He turned his head upward. Faustus seemed to be on the edge of ecstasy. He rapidly licked his lips and stared fixedly at the bleeding wound in the chest of the Nubian. At last, he re-grasped what was expected of him. The Nubian was a professional. Faustus spared. Two arena helpers escorted him out. Another gladiator took his place. The 6 men, 3 sapped and worn from their earlier battles, the other trio fresh, faced the box and saluted.
Oh, hell, we've got to go through this all over again.
Preacher swung his net with ease and cunning. He snared another gladiator and hurtled the hapless fighter toward the deadly tines of the trident. The man was mere milliseconds from being impaled on the deadly instrument.
Hold! He has fought well and is free to retire. You will face yet another more worthy opponent at once.
Looks like the folks in the Imperial box have got impatient. They're gonna wait for us all to finish our fights.
A huge fella lumbered out of the open gate. Taller by a head than Preacher, he was armed with a cestus and a twin-bladed dagger. He immediately went for Preacher. Like an elephant attacking a toad, he loomed over Preacher and contemptuously swept aside the net when it hissed toward him. The big man stepped in and engaged the trident with a dual-bladed knife. He gave a mighty twist and yanked it from Preacher's grasp. Then the muscular gladiator came at Preacher again. Philadelphia Braddock looked up at the sound of the charge. He saw the big man poised with his cestus raised above his head to deliver a fatal blow to Preacher. For the moment, Philadelphia ignored his own tormentor to grasp his sword in front of the hilt and hurl it like a lance. Preacher looked up with a nod and a smile at Philadelphia.
I reckon they aim to kill us for certain, sure. Ain't no goddamn reason we have to play by their rules.
Preacher quickly retrieved the spiked mace of an earlier opponent and looked for the portcullis, where his next enemy would appear. It turned out to be Spartacus. Eager to win Spartacus as an ally rather than have to kill him, Preacher raised his left hand in a cautionary gesture.
You don't have to end here, Spartacus.
Don't talk that talk to me, white man.
I mean it. You can get out of here too.
Spartacus would have none of it. He came at Preacher with a huge cudgel, a single long spike protruding through the side of the thick tip. It swung through the air as Preacher jumped back. Preacher whipped the air with his own mace. The spiked ball smashed into the boss of the shield on Spartacus's left arm. Preacher used his free hand to grab Spartacus's cudgel. The muscles of Preacher's left arm and shoulder strained to hold the powerful arm that supported the weapon.
Even though slavery is the law of the land, it don't amount to a hill of bison dung out here. If you join us in winning freedom and taking them helpless missionaries with us, I'll personally guarantee that you can make a new life for yourself in the high lonesome and live like a free man.
Why do I want that for? I'm due to earn a rooted soon, and that'll make me a wealthy man and free. Why should I risk all of that for a castle of white folk who probably owned slaves before they got captured?
They're Bible thumpers, mission folk. Their kind don't hold slaves.
Knowed me a preacher man down south. He owned himself 3 house slaves. I'll be a big man around here after I kill you and retire!
Unable to obtain his dominance above, Preacher used an old engine trick. He shifted his weight to one leg, shot the other forward, and hooked his heel behind the ankle of Spartacus. With a swift yank forward, he toppled the big black gladiator off his feet.
You're good. I'll give you that. Who are you anyway, Arcturus?
They call me Preacher.
Preacher? Good God. I'll be the richest man around if I finish you.
If. Main words, if. I think on that if I were you.
Preacher dove to the side, quickly recovering his fallen trident. Preacher deflected the cudgel with the shaft of his trident. Spartacus came on. Forced to give ground, Preacher brought his heel down on the half of the dropped weapon. Instantly, he stumbled and tottered off to one side.
You're gonna die, Preacher!
Preacher recovered himself as a deadly club flew past his left ear. The haft of the lethal object slammed painfully into the top of his shoulder. Already directed to its target, the trident cut a ragged gash in the lean side of Spartacus. Preacher used the moment gained by his trident attack to grab up his net from the ground. He sent it out like a sinuous snake to coil around Spartacus's ankle. Preacher ran swiftly around the black gladiator and bound his legs together. Then a hefty yank took Spartacus off his feet.
What?
In a staggered rush, Preacher closed with him and held the trident poised to drive 2 times into the man's thick neck. Slowly, reluctantly, he looked up at the Imperial box. Almost lasciviously, Faustus turned his small boy's thumb down.
Last chance, Spartacus.
With considerable regret and hesitancy, Spartacus nodded in the affirmative. Preacher relaxed the position of his weapon.
Kill him! Kill him!
Calmly, ignoring the willful child, Preacher reached down and unbound the legs of Spartacus, raised him to his feet, and disarmed him. Then he turned to the box.
He yielded!
I don't care! It's my age and my birthday, and I want to see men die!
I'll not kill a man who yields to me.
I want him dead! Now, now, now!
To his surprise, Preacher looked on as Marcus Quintus rose from his chair and spoke into his son's ear. At the first words, the boy went rigid and he shook with the intensity of his childish fury.
But Father!
Do it!
The boy gave a reluctant nod of agreement. He picked up his wand and raised it above his head. The spectators perched on the edges of their seat in silent expectation. Faustus pointed to the surviving gladiators one by one.
Come forward!
Preacher, Spartacus, Philadelphia, and Buck did as commanded. They were the only ones.
Since you three are under sentence of death for attempted escape, and you, Spartacus, have made a cowardly surrender and are already a dead man in our eyes, you shall all be thrown in with the Christians and lions. Let the games proceed!
Preacher faced the frightened missionaries in the large holding pen.
I'm only going to say this once. The only way out of here is to fight. There'll be plenty of weapons about the arena. I've seen them putting out swords and some spears. Now, they ain't going to be as good a quality as what the gladiators have, but you can kill with them. Your best bet is to fight back to back, four of you together. Protect your women and children inside the squares. That way, no cougar can come at you unexpected. When the last one is finished off, well, that's when we hit for the walls. Help one another up and over, and then we'll make a dash for it.
Encouraged by Preacher's positive outlook, Sister Amelia Witherspoon came forward.
Do you think we really have a chance?
If you do what me and my friends say, yeah, probably.
What if we do kill the cougars, only to be faced by men?
Well, there ain't that many of them left. Or didn't you watch us out there? By damn, if that's the case, you kill them too. It's the only way.
Out on the sand, the missionaries stood in blinking confusion. Preacher and the other men quickly armed themselves. A smaller, low gate swung open, and one of the handlers gave a mighty shove to the back of Deacon Abercrombie. He stumbled out onto the sand, bare to the waist, his pale, bleached-looking skin and flabby condition exposed. His wife ran to him, tears bright in her eyes, face aflame with embarrassment.
Cover yourself with my shawl.
You might not want to be kind to me, my dear. I betrayed you all to that monster Quintus. I only wanted freedom for you and I. I fear I may have prevented your one good chance to escape.
She draped the shawl over his shoulders and patted him consolingly.
There is a strange man, one of the gladiators, who says we still have a way to get out of here.
Where is he?
Over there.
Agatha Abercrombie pointed to Preacher.
Oh, the troublemaker. I'd not put much stock in him, my dear.
And then they let out the mountain lions. One of the men broke and began to run to the far side of the arena from the deadly animals. Preacher ran over to the man, but it was already too late. Quickly, he brought down the gladius on the cougar's spine. Instantly, Preacher turned to face another of the beasts bent upon attack. He whipped out a sword and sliced the beast's nose. Philadelphia on his right, Buck on his left, and Spartacus behind, the four fought off three more cougars. First two, then six more of the missionaries got the idea from this efficient means of downing the snarling bundle with lightning-fast fury. They quickly armed themselves and formed defensive squares. Only Deacon Abercrombie remained alone and exposed, and one big cat soon discovered this.
Stop! I command you in the name of the Lord! Ah! Ah!
Ah! Only a short distance away, Preacher took two fast steps forward and plunged the leaf-bladed gladius to the hilt in the animal's chest. Cougar went down immediately, bits of Deacon Abercrombie still hanging from its jaw. Now the spectators cheered the beleaguered missionaries, They had thought to be amused by the pitifully useless antics of the condemned wretches, only to find objects of admiration in the sudden courage displayed by desperate people.
Imagine that. All of a sudden, they're on our side. Reckon that'll jerk the jaw of that bloody-minded boy brat.
He likes to see blood run right enough, but I don't think it's the blood of his prized cats. That one's sick in the head. You can tell by the look in his eyes.
Best save our breath for fighting, Buck. Let's get these folks on the move. Form up close together in two lines. Let's target for the cougars that way.
One of the tawny creatures leaped into the air for a high attack. The creature squatted and split open its belly with his gladius.
What good'll that do?
We can move around the sand like the hands on a clock. Finish off what's left in no time.
Quickly, the four men were able to gather the missionaries into the new formation. They methodically began hacking and slashing at the cougars until only one single pair remained. The last of the big cats could smell the odor of their dead companions. Fangs dripping the foam of their fury, they flung themselves at the wall of human flesh that inexorably forced them to move. The cougar that had felled the man didn't get to savor its victory. Amelia sank the javelin into the side of the blood-slobbering beast and disemboweled Brother Frazier.
Good girl! I knew she had some pluck.
An instant later, Preacher had to defend himself against the last of the beasts. It hurtled at his part of the line. Preacher buried his gladius in its chest, so not before it had its forelegs wrapped around him and the claws bit into his back. Then, half a dozen swords, javelins, and tridents sank in his golden coat to dry the last of life from the animal. Pressure eased in Preacher's back, and he felt the gentle touch of Philadelphia as his friend pried the claws from him.
It's all done.
I doubt that, Philadelphia.
Once assured that no more mountain lions lurked to spring upon him, the surviving force turned as one to face the blighted little boy who ran the games. Preacher saw through the haze of pain and the sting of sweat in his eyes that Faustus's face had been twisted into a mask of evil. Then, with a sudden-born smile of such sweetness as to melt the hardest heart, the boy made a signal with his imperial baton. First came the cleaning crew. They hauled off the carcasses of the dead cougars, spread fresh sand over the pools of blood, then exited. It gave everyone time to catch their breath. It also allowed the timid among the missionaries to exercise their imaginations on what might come next. Preacher, Philadelphia, Buck, and Spartacus considered the same thing, though not colored by fear and trepidation.
I reckon that little monster's gonna throw something else at us. Why ain't we moving?
He'll have to do something. Got his neck stuck a whole ways out, seeing how we'd all die. Whatever it is will maybe give us a better opening.
Preacher turned to the black gladiator.
What do you figure, Spartacus? And, you know, it'd be kind of nice to know your real name.
It's no better than the one they hung on me. Now you won't laugh. Aloysius.
Well then, Spartacus it is.
Obliged. I expect it's how that little bastard will send in the whole rest of the gladiators. Oh, they'll finish these weaklings fast, and then it'll be up to us.
Not if I can come up with something better.
It'd best be good.
The portcullis raised to admit the 20 remaining trained gladiators. Their weapons were of the serious type. No gaudy costumes or colorful shields. They carried workmanlike swords, flails, javelins, and they had two bows. They advanced, their arms at rest, to salute the box. That's when Providence handed Preacher a large portion of good fortune.
I gotta make this fast. All of you listen up! Whatever we do, you do! And that starts now! Run at them!
The missionaries' charge froze the group of gladiators for a vital moment. Preacher smashed one to his knees with the flat of his blade and shoved through to stab another in the gut. Philadelphia drove a pilum into the gut of a burly gladiator. Philadelphia left the pilum in his victim, snatched up the flail, and shoved on into the melee of struggling gladiators. At once, the creature led the way to the gate, which had not yet begun to close. He darted under the pointed ends of the portico and downed the guard with a sword thrust. Beside him, Buck Sears killed the guard at the windlass that controlled the wooden framed iron barrier and quickly grabbed hold to secure it. Behind him came Philadelphia and Spartacus. They made short work of the three astonished handlers. Then they turned back to hold the opening for the missionary. Hewing like gleaners in a wheat field, the mobile church and the Wildwood members smashed through the ranks of gladiators. They streamed by ones and twos toward the open gateway. When the last one cleared the barrier, Buck let it go. Led by a preacher in Philadelphia, the missionaries rushed down the stone corridor into the bowels of the Colosseum. Amelia Witherspoon had dropped her pilum and clung to Preacher all the way.
Where are we going?
Preacher nodded to the tunnel entrance.
To the home of the Master of Games.
But why? Isn't that dangerous?
Not so much as not doing it. For one thing, I'm not leaving here without my horses and my shooting gear. And I got me a pair of Walker Colts I've grown kind of fond of.
Preacher slowed his pace and halted the group midway in the tunnel.
All right, listen up, folks. This ain't over yet. We're going to the storehouse and the Game Master's house. You can get better weapons, and you're gonna need them, and horses to make a quick getaway.
You mean there'll be more fighting?
Oh, sure as skunk stink, ma'am. There's a better part of two legions out there.
Entering the storeroom at the house of Justinius Bulbus from the Gladiator School proved easier than the frontal approach. The two guards at the far end of the tunnel had gone down like one man when Preacher and Spartacus unexpectedly appeared. With them out of the way, Preacher had called upon the great strength of Spartacus to help him breach the iron gate. The gate opened with a great protest, and the refugee missionaries stumbled through. Being empty, the school had an eerie quality to it. Buck Sears led the way to the passageway that issued into Bulbus's residence. Preacher took the point with long strides past the colorful tile murals that lined the hallway. He signaled for a halt when he reached the far end. A wooden barred gate closed off the passage. Preacher gave it a try and it swung open on well-oiled hinges. He found himself once again in the courtyard with its tinkling fountain. This time, the steward happened to be out picking posies for his master's tables.
Come here, Tom!
Three burly sentries quickly lumbered into the courtyard. They showed their abundance of dedication and lack of intelligence by charging through. Now, Preacher was by far not a skilled swordsman, but he had nevertheless learned tricks in the gladiator school that were foreign to one of the stolid soldiers. The soldier lost his hand with Preacher's first slice, and his head with the second. Preacher looked to his left. Spartacus held one of the guards over his head, straightened out like a man asleep on his back. He broke the man over his knee. Preacher looked the other way to check on Philadelphia Braddock. Philadelphia smashed the shoulder of the last guard. Stunned, the man went on one knee, his shield up to protect his head.
Spartacus, stay there with Buck. We'll bring you weapons, food, and a horse.
In the arms store, the more aggressive among the young missionaries acted like kids in a vacant candy store. Preacher three times had to caution one or the other about taking too many rifles.
Nah, it takes too long to reload. It'll tire your horse, too. Take 4 or 6 pistols instead.
He quickly found his favorites and loaded them all.
Load up everyone you take. We'll be needing them to get out of this place.
That prediction proved to be only too true the moment they reached the street. 20 soldiers trotted their way in formation down the Via Julius. Shields up, their pili aligned perfectly. The legionnaires advanced, only their shins and grim faces visible. In his insane state as Marcus Quintus Americus, Alexander Reardon had made only one mistake. He had insisted on accuracy in arms and armor. The Romans had fought long before gunpowder came into being. Their advance became a rout. The soldiers' armor was far from being able to stop a bullet. It went down quickly. Even the missionaries were surprised at the ease in which the soldiers died. Panic broke out in the streets until the crowd saw the thoroughly armed bandit thunder down on them. Then they gave way rapidly. In seemingly no time, the fugitives reached a gate. creature took aim at the guard who wrestled the draw close to the thick, heavy bear.
Come on, folks, don't dally. We got lots of miles to put between us and them.
Confusion and surprise turned to panic when the order to shut the gates was taken too literally by the stadium staff. Spectators swarmed into the aisles, only to find the entrances to the Colosseum barred against them. They began to push and shove, then to fight amongst themselves. In the Imperial box, his face aflame and scarlet in childish fury, Quintus Faustus stared at the madness before him. Robbed of his bloody climax, he lost what tenuous hold he had on his reason. Marcus Quintus saw the trembling boy with slobber and foam flying from his lips and rose to confront his son. He put a hand on Faustus' shoulder and squeezed gently. Frenetically, Faustus jerked away from his touch. Exasperated and embarrassed beyond endurance, Quintus lost his grip for a moment.
Control yourself!
Faustus sat down abruptly and buried his head in. Marcus Quintus knew at once that he had to take command.
Open the vomitoria! Clear these people out of here! Bring Legged Varus! I want his cavalry after that vermin at once! Bring me Legged Glubii! Start a search of the city! Do it now!
Varus appeared beside Quintus and saluted.
Get out of here! Use the private tunnel! Organize your cavalry and get up to those people!
Varus saluted again and departed hastily. Gaius Septimus Glubii came next.
I want the legions organized at once. Outfit them for a long time in the field. They are to search for the escaped prisoners. I want them back, all of them.
Do you believe they've gotten out of the city?
They will have by the time order can be restored.
Preacher led the fleeing prisoners at a fast pace down the Via Ostia, named for the port to the west of ancient Rome. 2 miles beyond the corrupt city, he slowed the pace to a quick walk.
We've lost everything. Our wagons, our portable organ, even the pulpit.
Be thankful we got out of that place alive, Agatha.
Excuse me? I am unaccustomed to accepting such criticism from anyone, especially from my inferiors, Amelia.
Oh, that's quite obvious. Only I don't see myself as your inferior. I didn't see you raise a hand to defend yourself, let alone anyone else back there.
How dare you!
Agatha looked around herself for some support. Finding none, she redirected her anger at Preacher.
This is all your fault, you heathen barbarian!
Yeah, it sure as hell is, and right proud of it I am. Weren't but 5 of you folks got harmed. Might be if you'd lend a hand, maybe someone would be with us right now. As for this fine young woman, she carried her share of the load, fought bravely, did in a couple of cougars, 2 gladiators, and a soldier. On my tally sheet, that puts her head and shoulders your better, ma'am. God damned if it don't.
The cavalcade crested the saddle notch and halted on the far side. By then, Preacher had worked out what needed to be done.
All right, everybody rest some. Drink a little water, eat something. Now, the way I see it, our best chance lies with splitting up. That way it thins out them that comes after us. There's something else we need to decide on. I declare that place is the foulest nest of snakes I've ever run across. Ain't gonna change much from what I guess. So this nasty business has to be ended right and proper. And to do that, we have to have help.
Preacher pointed to Philadelphia and Buck.
I want you to set off to find any old woolly-eared fellows that's nesting out there somewhere. Philadelphia, you take the west trails. Buck, you head east. I'm gonna cut down to the southwest, find Bold Pony and his Arapahoes. A couple of those prisoners who died at the hands of Quintus's gladiators were from his band, I learned. That gives him a stake in fixing this tainted meat, too. Spartacus, you done good to join us. I want you to stick with these pilgrims. Teach them more about how to fight, because when the time comes, they're gonna need to know. Take the big trail south to Trout Creek Pass. It's well marked. We'll all rendezvous there and lay plans.
Preacher, how do I get any of these mountain men to join us?
You tell them you're asking in my name, Buck, and I'll send along a note to that effect. Most of these boys can make out right and good enough, and those what can't do know my name and my ghost wolf sign.
I want to stay with you, Preacher.
Preacher shook his head as he spoke to Amelia.
No, now. It'll be too dangerous.
What could be more dangerous than what we just faced?
Where I'm going, the Indians mightily favor a long lock of yellow hair on their scalp poles.
Preacher turned to the rest of them, the subject closed for his part.
So, we'll all rendezvous at the trading post. I'll bring in the Arapaho last to prevent a panic.
Preacher took a narrow trail to the southwest when he departed from the others. Leading his pack horse, he made much better time than Spartacus and the missionaries. He was far out on the Great Divide Basin when sundown caught up with him. He made a hasty cold camp and settled in for the night. He doubted he would see anything of the soldiers from New Rome, but he didn't want a fire to betray his presence anyway.
Hang in there, old fella. We's a pair, we are.
Ah! Marcus Quintus Americus hurled a gold-rimmed wine cup across the room to splinter on the plinth of a bust of Augustus Caesar. Shocked, Legate Varus of the cavalry watched as the liquid pooled on the marble floor.
Are you totally incompetent? How can you come to me with a report like this?
Because it is my duty, and it is the truth. Beyond the territory of New Rome, we found no trace of them. A large body of the fleeing prisoners rode south on the main trail for some while. Then their tracks faded out.
How could four barbarians and that lot of pitiful Christians defeat professional gladiators and outwit my well-trained soldiers to make good this escape? Oh, well, they'll not get away with it. I want you to get out there by an hour after sundown, best possible speed. Catch up to those vermin, kill only those you must, and bring back the rest. Take what supplies you need, and don't leave any area unsearched! Now leave me. I must talk with the commanders of the other legions.
Glaubii and Bruno entered together. Quintus eyed them coldly, arms folded over the front of his toga.
Gentlemen, I must compliment you on the thoroughness of your search of our city. Unlike that incompetent ass Varus, who lost all trace of the fugitives, you did come up with three escaped slaves. That they were not involved with those from the Colosseum is not important. Given that those condemned prisoners had already ridden out of the gates, you did the best you could. Now I have to ask more of you. I am not convinced that we have seen the last of those miscreants. Here is what I want you to do. I want you to establish watchtowers completely around the rim of this basin. Staff them with enough men to be alert around the clock. Also set up heliographs and signal fires. Have horses, so a messenger can reach the city well ahead of whoever comes back. Set your engineers to manufacturing ballistae, catapults, and arbalests.
You are certain they will attack us?
Of course! I have learned only this morning that there are enough of these barbarian mountain men with savage allies to form a force that will outnumber us. The important thing is not to let the Senate and the people know that. If we are prepared, if we have advance warning, the quality of the legions and the power of some weapons I have provided will assure our victory.
That word caught the interest of both generals.
What weapons are these?
Some firearms, also a few cannon that will far outperform our other artillery.
How many firearms? What sort of cannon?
Enough to tip the scale.
And when do we train men to use them?
We start this afternoon. Now get out of here. Get orders published for what is needed and get to work.
Buck Sears had traveled the trails of Texas, driven teams on the Santa Fe Trail, and most recently had rented his talents to those seeking to take goods overland to the Northwest Territory. It made him fairly savvy about movement where engines were a factor, how to repair wagons when the nearest wheelwright or coat shop lay 500 miles beyond. But it had not taught him how to find mountain men when sent to round up any who remained in the ranges of the Rocky Mountains. In fact, it was they who found him, more or less.
You there, stumbling around in the bush. You be friendly, sing out and let us know who you might be.
Hello! The name's Sears, Buck Sears. I'm a freight wagon teamster.
You sure in a hell of long ways from a wagon route. Come in, set a spell, have some coffee.
You got a camp out here?
Sure enough do. Head yourself due north and you'll run into it.
Buck blundered through the brush, leading his mount until he came to a small clearing surrounded by ash and juniper trees. Three men sat around a stone-guarded hat-sized fire over which a coffee pot steamed. Buck ground-reined his horse and came forward.
Well, here I am, Buck Sears.
My name's Abel Williams, but folks mostly call me Squinty. This here's Jack Lonesome and that other fella there, Three Finger. Come on in, sit.
Obliged.
Settled on a mat of aspen leaves, Buck sipped the strongest coffee he had ever tasted, worried for the lining of his stomach, and exchanged incidentals with the three mountain men for several minutes. Then, when Squinty Williams hinted delicately at what business brought Buck into the mountains, he unveiled his story of New Rome. They listened in amazement, doubt written very plainly on their faces. Buck noted this and concluded his personal story to get to the heart of the situation.
The thing is, 6 years after I was taken by these lunatics, two of you mountain men were captured, Philadelphia Braddock and Preacher.
Jack Lonesome shook his head in pure disbelief.
Nah, couldn't be. Excuse me. No amount of fellas running around in skirts could best Preacher.
All the same, it's true. He said I might run into some resistance. Said along this note.
Buck dug into his shirt pocket and produced the scrap of paper upon which Preacher had scribbled his appeal. Squinty took it and peered intently at it. Finally, he nodded.
That's his name right enough, and his ghost wolf marker. What's it say, Jack?
Jack Lonesome took the message.
This is to advise any fellers contacted by Buck Sears that we has us a large problem needs solving right fast. Sorry. Buck will explain it to you, and I'll ask you to come fast to Trout Creek Pass and lend a hand. For old times, Preacher. Excuse me.
Well, I'll be damned. You got our help, Buck. Tell us about this place again, and then we'll make use of the rest of the day getting out of here.
Buck related the final days in New Rome and what Preacher and Philadelphia were up to at the moment. All three mountain men thought on it. Then Squinty came to his boots.
We know where half a dozen of our friends are fixing to hang out for the winter. We'll go get them and then head to the rendezvous with Preacher. And I ain't never seen me a man in no skirt before. But I reckon we can sure put the fear of God in a bunch of them.
On his fourth day away from New Rome, Philadelphia Braddock ambled into a camp in the Medicine Bow Range, occupied by Blue Nose Herkimer. There he also found Four Eyes Finney, a wild Irish brawler turned mountain man, Carl Bloody Hand Kruger, Nate Youngblood, and Frenchy Dupree. After a few bear hugs, Philadelphia filled him in on what had been happening in the Ferris Range. Bloody Hand Kruger flat out did not believe it.
Fair chest. That's all it is. Horseshit. I was through there back of Aries, and I never saw anything like that.
How long ago was that, Carl?
10, maybe 12 years ago.
A lot can happen in that time, and it surely did. That's about the time this crazy fella calls himself Marcus Quintus Americus came out here. Boys, I've been there. Saw the buildings, took baths in a fancy building, and fought for my life in a place where folks come and watch you die for the fun of it. Preacher was there with me, like I said. Now, fellas, what'll it be? Are you going to join us in doing away with this place of corruption or not?
An old and dear friend of Preacher, Dupree rose and dusted off the seat of his trousers.
I am ready, mon ami. These people sound to be très evil. If Preacher needs our help, I say we give it to him.
Nate Youngblood nodded his head in agreement.
You can count on me.
Blue Nose Herkimer rose to his feet.
I'm with you, Philadelphia.
Four Eyes Finney tugged at a thick forelock of sandy hair.
Sharon, it sounds like a fine Donnybrook. Count me in.
Although the German mountain man had a long list of grievances against Preacher, Carl Kruger even nodded in acceptance.
I'll go. What the hell? Preacher's one of us. A no fancy Roman is going to put on a mountain man.
By jing, that shines. You can all head out at first light. It's a ways to Trout Creek Pass. I'm leaving now to see if I can scare up some other fellas.
Preacher found Bold Pony and his band settled down in their winter camp in a tidy little valley. he was welcomed with stately courtesy. Then Bold Pony noticed Preacher's injuries. He sent at once for the medicine man.
I could have taken care of that for myself.
The poultices the shaman put on his cuts and bruises felt cool and soothing, and the Arapaho medicine man could get to the claw marks on his back better than he had been able to.
Not while you are in my camp, friend. You will speak of how you received these injuries at the Council Fire tonight.
Yeah, I sort of hunted you down for that exact reason. There's some mighty bad people out there that need a lesson taught to them.
We will eat first and drink coffee.
After the men ate, Bold Pony gathered his tribe around the bonfire in the middle of a camp. Preacher described the city from which he had just escaped. He spoke about the cruelty of the people. And lastly, he told the Indians about the members of their tribe that he had seen brutally slain in the arena.
Thing is, they got anger towards everyone. They call us barbarians, and you folks too. Fellow who'd been there 6 years told me they plan on fighting everyone out here. And he's telling the truth, too.
With that, the members of the tribe gathered together to decide what they would do. After a while, Bold Pony stepped away from the group, walked up to Preacher.
You must have other visits to make, Ghost Wolf. You may as well tend to them now. This will be a long time deciding. Go to the trading posts and wait for us. We will be along if we are coming. Within 2 days.
In New Rome, preparations for war went on at a fevered pace. The two bold legions, actually their strength compared more realistically with two understrength platoons, conducted mock battles on the field of Mars. Campus Martius swarmed with armed and armored troops, their faces grim and set in concentration. Centurions raised their swords in signal.
Lock shields and prepare to form the phalanx!
Centurions lowered their weapons rapidly.
Form up!
At once, the soldiers in the middle of the squares raised their shields overhead, shielding themselves and the outer two ranks as well. Each pilot pointed outward, a hedgehog of defense. Standing in his white chariot, its basket support set off in gold, Marcus Quintus Americus looked on with satisfaction. His heart thundered with excitement. Elsewhere, those men who had proven to be passable marksmen drilled with the rifles. What a shock that would be when those mountain rabble returned. Gaius Septimus rode up on a white charger.
A couple more run-throughs and my legion will be ready for a cavalry charge.
Excellent. They are learning faster than I expected, and I'm pleased.
Here's the bad news. Some of your spies have ferreted out the information that the condemned man Arturus was in fact Preacher.
By all the gods! All that while I had my hands on Preacher and did not know it! How could that have happened?
I suspected it when I saw him fight at the school, yet I had nothing to prove it.
Who verified his identity?
Bulbus, for one. He overheard one of the other gladiators call him that.
Oh, the fool! He should have reported it! We could have kept him in a cell alone and fought him differently. None of what happened would have been possible.
And we wouldn't be running around like chickens with our heads cut off, trying to prepare for war.
What was that?
Nothing, Quintus. I have to get back to my Primus Pilus.
Vicky reached across the darkened room and lightly touched her brother on the arm.
Terry, psst. Preacher's coming back.
Who told you that?
Nobody. I just know.
You and your knowing things. It's like you saying he was in real big danger. A body can't know those sort of things.
Well, I can. I sort of feel things. Preacher's been hurt, too. I know that. So there.
How'd he get hurt, Smarty?
Oh, Terry, I can't tell you that. I don't know how I know these things.
What do you suppose we should do?
Don't ask me. That's for you to figure out.
Why don't we go to meet him?
We don't know where he's coming from.
Yes, we do. He went north from here when he left us our new clothes. We'll just go north.
Really? Do you think it'll work?
We won't know unless we try. And we can't tell anyone.
When do we go?
Tomorrow.